I believe in the sanctity of marriage. Activist judges are actually defining the definition of marriage. And the surest way to protect marriage between a man and woman is to amend the Constitution.
The Supreme Court of the United States is at stake in this race, ladies and gentlemen. And I want to make sure we have judges who interpret the Constitution of the United States according to the law.
We're going to reach out to the straight world, who, once they see this film, will hopefully say, I get it, and be supportive of our equal rights.
Welcome to This Way Out, the International Gay and Lesbian Radio Magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. A constitutional crisis emerges over EU justice. Bush and Kerry debate matrimony, the Supreme Court, and Mary, and Tying the Knot documents the personal in marriage equality politics. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Rick Watts.
And I'm Cindy Friedman.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the week ending October 16th, 2004. Italy's anti-gay nominee to the European Commission could create a constitutional crisis for the European Union. This week, Rocco Buttiglione, who's slated for a 5-year term as the EU's Justice Commissioner beginning November 1st, became the first EC nominee ever to be rejected by a committee of the European Parliament. The EP Justice and Civil Liberties Committee first voted 27-26 to find him unsuitable for the justice portfolio, and then voted 28-25 to find him unsuitable for any role on the European Commission. The EC is the executive branch of the European Union and is composed of one appointee from each member nation. The European Parliament can only confirm or reject the entire 25-member slate, not individual commission appointees. But left-wing leaders believe they can amass the parliamentary votes to take that unprecedented drastic action, if necessary, to keep Buttiglione out of the justice post. Incoming Commission President José Manuel Barroso has so far vigorously defended Buttiglione, but he's being backed into a corner by this threat of a constitutional crisis. It seems most likely that Barroso will at least have to slate Buttiglione for a different commission role, if not force him to stand down from his nomination altogether. But if Buttiglione somehow wins through to serving as Justice Commissioner, he'll have to face on a regular basis the same parliamentary committee that rejected him.
Buttiglione, currently Italy's Minister for European Affairs, is also a philosophy professor and a close friend of the Pope, who's often written in defense of positions of the Roman Catholic Church. When serving as a member of the EP himself, he introduced an amendment to remove sexual orientation as a category protected from discrimination under the EU's Charter of Fundamental Rights. Appearing before the Civil Liberties Committee last week, he admitted that he views homosexuality as a sin, although he claimed that as a commissioner he would defend the rights of gays and lesbians on the same basis as all other European citizens. This week he told reporters that he views many people as sinners, including himself. Buttiglione has also indicated to the committee that the institution of marriage was for women to have children, apparently rejecting marriage equality for same-gender couples. Buttiglione and his defenders assert that the European Parliament's opposition is based on bias against both the Catholic Church and the Italian government that nominated him. Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi and many other Italians are outraged at the perceived insult.
Italy is also the source of a study published this week that suggests not only a genetic contribution to male homosexuality, but a theory for its evolutionary success. University of Padua researcher Andrea Comperio led a team that found gay men are more likely than non-gay men to have gay male relatives on the maternal side, indicating, as other studies have, that there may be a genetic factor on the X chromosome. But they also found that gay men's mothers, sisters, and maternal aunts have significantly more children than those relations of non-gay men. They theorize that the same genetic factor that contributes to male homosexuality also contributes to female fertility. That's a factor natural selection would favor, even though gay men themselves might be expected to father fewer children.
The Italian study became public on the day of the U.S. presidential debate in which the nominees, both of whom oppose marriage equality, were asked if they believe homosexuality is a choice. Republican President George W. Bush admitted he just didn't know. Democratic challenger Senator John Kerry referred to Vice President Dick Cheney's lesbian daughter Mary as an example of how sexual orientation is not a choice. His choice of example sparked outrage from both the Cheney family and the White House. That contrasted with Dick Cheney's simple thanks in the earlier vice presidential debate when his Democratic challenger Senator John Edwards referred to the Cheneys' love for their lesbian daughter.
The official tally of Australia's national elections won't be known for some weeks to come, but it's not too soon for some gay and lesbian activists to fear the worst. It appears that Prime Minister John Howard's Liberal National Coalition government has not only convincingly renewed its control of the lower house for a fourth term, but also gained control of the Senate as well. No government has controlled both houses since 1980. Some fear that this could allow the coalition not only to continue its customary blocking of legislative advances towards gay and lesbian equality, but to begin actively rolling them back. The fear finds some foundation in the sudden emergence in this election of the Family First Party as a national power. Although that party tries to distinguish itself from the U.S. religious right, all of its leadership are significantly involved in the Assemblies of God Pentecostal movement, particularly the Paradise Church. If the coalition does not gain an outright majority in the Senate, it looks to be Family First that will hold the balance of power with the vote to give the government the edge.
Australia uses a complicated system that includes consideration of voters' preferences in rank ordering multiple candidates and political parties' agreements to swap those preference points in close races. Even before any vote had been cast, Family First was building political power through preference deals with other parties, primarily with the coalition. The Prime Minister personally negotiated with them. The largest opposition party, the Australian Labor Party, and even the left-wing Australian Democrats sought preference deals with Family First. These deals make Family First much stronger than suggested by the votes actually cast for it, apparently less than 2% nationwide. One Liberal Party candidate Family First refused to support was open lesbian Ingrid Tall, a challenger for a parliamentary seat from Brisbane. She's convinced that the spotlight their refusal threw on her sexual orientation killed what had been seen as a strong chance for her to win. Family First also hit the headlines when one of its volunteers answered affirmatively when asked if the party believed that lesbians should be burned to death, although the party did act to discipline that volunteer. Also out of West Australia, it's still in doubt as to whether openly gay Democrat Brian Gregg will return to the National Senate, where he's been a powerful voice for gay and lesbian equality. Overall, in addition to the coalition trouncing its main competitor, the Australian Labor Party, the gay support of Australian Democrats appear all but wiped out. The gay support of Greens seem to have made gains despite being demonized by Family First, but those gains appear to be smaller than had been predicted.
Britain's House of Commons this week debated the government's civil partnerships bill on its second reading and approved it in principle by a 9-1 margin. The bill to create registered partnerships for same-gender couples with many of the legal benefits of marriage will now be dealt with in detail in a parliamentary committee. In the course of the floor debate, the government announced that it will move to ensure that surviving registered partners will have standing equal to married spouses for collecting public service pension benefits after one partner dies. This marked a policy shift spurred by pressure both from within the ranks of the ruling Labour Party and from their allies, the Liberal Democrats. The government promised to act on the pensions as well as other tax-related issues in the first finance bill to arise once partnerships have been created.
Previously, the House of Lords had added what were considered wrecking amendments to the partnerships bill, extending its provisions to other cohabitants, including blood relatives and live-in caregivers. Those amendments were not discussed on the Commons floor, but government spokespeople made clear they will be removed. The bill cannot be enacted without the Lords' approval.
One of British gay and lesbian activists' longest-running campaigns has finally been won. Sandals Resorts is opening its 13 Caribbean hotels to gay and lesbian couples. shortly before a corporate spokesperson was scheduled to defend Sandals' 20-year-old policy against serving same-gender couples on BBC Radio this week, a Sandals lobbyist distributed a statement that the company had recently lifted the ban. A Sandals spokesperson told reporters that the policy change had actually been implemented in August, although apparently no effort had been made to make it public. What Sandals did was make what it labeled a strategic decision to drop the word heterosexual from its advertising while maintaining its goal of creating vacations for those couples. The use of the term had become illegal as well as a social issue in a growing number of places, particularly within the European Union. As a service provider, Sandals was not subject to Britain's relatively new anti-discrimination law, but Mayor Ken Livingstone had joined activists in working to remove Sandals ads from London's public transportation.
And finally, Planet Out Incorporated this week became the first gay-identified corporation in the U.S. to make an initial public offering of stock. San Francisco-based website Planet Out, which carries This Way Out, offered 4.6 million shares on the NASDAQ, hoping to raise $39 million. In fact, the company raised almost $42 million as the shares gained 16% from their $9 opening to close at $10.40. Just how identified is Planet Out with the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender community? For its ticker symbol, it chose LGBT.
That's News Wrap for the week ending October 16th, 2004. Written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK, Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm Rick Watts.
The debate over marriage equality in the U.S. is personal as well as political. You'll hear about a highly acclaimed new film that documents that debate later in the program. Two of the three nationally televised debates between Republican U.S. President George W. Bush and his Democratic challenger, Senator John Kerry, covered domestic policies, and both of them had the candidates tackle questions of interest to the lesbian, gay, bi, and trans community. One of the exchanges set off a bombshell that continues to reverberate through the campaign. The other generated little vitriol, but the issue certainly will have a far greater impact on the movement for LGBT equality in the long run. No one could have guessed that the L word would become one of the lead stories in the spin storm following the final debate on October 13th. It began with a fundamental question about marriage rights posed by moderator Bob Schieffer of CBS News.
Mr. President, let's get back to economic issues, but let's shift to some other questions here. Both of you are opposed to gay marriage, but to understand how you have come to that conclusion, I want to ask you a more basic question. Do you believe homosexuality is a choice?
You know, Bob, I don't know. I just don't know. I do know that we have a choice to make in America, and that is to treat people with tolerance and respect and dignity. It's important that we do that. I also know in a free society, people, consenting adults, can live the way they want to live, and that's to be honored. But as we respect someone's rights, and as we, you know, profess tolerance, we shouldn't change, or have to change, our basic views on the sanctity of marriage. I believe in the sanctity of marriage. I think it's very important that we protect marriage as an institution between a man and a woman. I proposed a constitutional amendment. The reason I did so was because I was worried that activist judges are actually defining the definition of marriage. And the surest way to protect marriage between a man and woman is to amend the Constitution. It has also the benefit of allowing citizens to participate in the process. After all, when you amend the Constitution, state legislatures must participate in the ratification of the Constitution. I'm deeply concerned that judges are making those decisions and not the citizenry of the United States. You know, Congress passed a law called DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act. My opponent was against it. It basically protected states from the action of one state to another. It also defined marriage as between a man and a woman. But I'm concerned that that will get overturned, and if it gets overturned, then we'll end up with marriage being defined by courts. And I don't think that's in our nation's interest.
Senator Kerry?
We're all God's children, Bob, and I think if you were to talk to Dick Cheney's daughter, who is a lesbian, she would tell you that she's being who she was. She's being who she was born as. I think if you talk to anybody, it's not a choice. I've met people who struggled with this for years. People who were in a marriage because they were living a sort of convention and they struggled with it. And I've met wives who are supportive of their husbands or vice versa when they finally sort of broke out and allowed themselves to live who they were, who they felt God had made them. I think we have to respect that. The president and I share the belief that marriage is between a man and a woman. I believe that. I believe marriage is between a man and a woman. But I also believe that because we are the United States of America, we're a country with a great, unbelievable constitution with rights that we afford people, that you can't discriminate in the workplace. You can't discriminate in the rights that you afford people. You can't disallow someone the right to visit their partner in a hospital. You have to allow people to transfer property, which is why I'm for partnership rights. It's over. Now, with respect to DOMA and the marriage laws, the states have always been able to manage those laws, and they're proving today, every state, that they can manage them adequately.
Although Senator John Edwards' tribute to the Cheney's lesbian daughter during their vice presidential matchup drew a simple thank you from Dick Cheney that most analysts found heartwarming, Kerry's mention was harshly criticized. The outraged mother, Lynn Cheney, called the reference to Mary a cheap and tawdry political trick. Her indignant husband charged that Kerry would say anything and do anything to get elected. As Kerry issued a statement clarifying his constructive and respectful intentions, and Republicans accused him of deviously trying to alienate the Bush-Cheney conservative base, queer activists and others puzzled over why openly discussing the openly lesbian Mary Cheney was so controversial. Some of those skeptical about the outrage wondered why her protective parents failed to speak out when Illinois Republican senatorial candidate Alan Keyes branded Mary and all lesbians and gays selfish hedonists, or when GOP operatives used homophobic scare tactics to curry favor with the religious right. Presidential appointments to the U.S. Supreme Court was the stealth queer issue of the debates. It's projected that as many as three new justices will be named during the next administration, justices who may very well rule on marriage equality and other rights. So the candidates' approaches to those decisions is of utmost importance. Moderator Charlie Gibson of ABC News introduced the questioner at the October 8th town hall format debate.
Mr. President, the next question is for you, and it comes from Jonathan Michelson. Over here.
Mr. President, if there were a vacancy in the Supreme Court and you had the opportunity to fill that position today, who would you choose and why?
I'm not telling. I really don't haven't picked anybody yet. Plus, I want them all voting for me. I would pick somebody who would not allow their personal opinion to get in the way of the law. I would pick somebody who would strictly interpret the Constitution of the United States. Let me give you a couple of examples, I guess, of the kind of person I wouldn't pick. I wouldn't pick a judge who said that the Pledge of Allegiance couldn't be said in a school because it had the words "under God" in it. I think that's an example of a judge allowing personal opinion to enter into the decision-making process as opposed to strict interpretation of the Constitution. Another example would be the Dred Scott case, which is where judges years ago said that the Constitution allowed slavery because of personal property rights. That's personal opinion. That's not what the Constitution says. The Constitution of the United States says we're all, you know, it doesn't say that. It doesn't speak to the equality of America. And so I would pick people that would be strict constructionists. We got plenty of lawmakers in Washington, D.C. Legislators make law. Judges interpret the Constitution. And I suspect one of us will have a pick at the end of next 4 years. And that's the kind of judge I'm going to put on there. No litmus test except for how they interpret the Constitution. Thank you.
Senator Kerry?
Minute and a half.
Thank you, Charlie. A few years ago, when he came to office, the president said, these are his words, what we need are some good conservative judges on the courts. And he said also that his two favorite justices are Justice Scalia and Justice Thomas. So you get a pretty good sense of where he's heading if he were to appoint somebody. Now, here's what I believe. I don't believe we need a good conservative judge, and I don't believe we need a good liberal judge. I don't believe we need a good judge of that kind of definition on either side. I subscribe to the Justice Potter Stewart standard. He was a justice on the Supreme Court of the United States. And he said the mark of a good judge, good justice, is that when you're reading their decision, their opinion, you can't tell if it's written by a man or a woman, a liberal or a conservative, a Muslim, a Jew, or a Christian. You just know you're reading a good judicial decision. What I want to find, if I am privileged to have the opportunity to do it, and the Supreme Court of the United States is at stake in this race, ladies and gentlemen, the future of things that matter to you in terms of civil rights, what kind of justice department you'll have, whether we'll enforce the law, will we have equal opportunity, will women's rights be protected, will we have equal pay for women, which is going backwards, will a woman's right to choose be protected. These are constitutional rights, and I want to make sure we have judges who interpret the Constitution of the United States according to the law.
You've been listening to the queer relevant parts of the recent U.S. presidential debates. Most pundits believe the outcome of the November 2nd elections will truly be the most important in recent memory. I'm Greg Gordon reporting for This Way Out. Tying the Knot has been getting rave reviews from critics and audiences alike. The documentary examines the debate over marriage equality in the United States from historical, political, and personal points of view. This Way Out's Steve Pride spent some time with director Jim DeSevres and documented their conversation. With copious clips, here's the first of his very special two-part report.
Marriage is very simple, a union between one man and one woman.
This fad that is sweeping the world right now is dangerous because it undermines the legal basis for marriage. That will destroy the family, which will destroy the nation.
My name is Jim DeSevres. I'm the director of a new film called Tying the Knot. Making Tying the Knot was really a personal journey. When I first started it, my partner and I were facing the whole binational couple issue. He's from Indonesia, I'm from the United States. And based on our love alone, he was not able to stay in this country. And this is it's a common phenomenon, as a lot of people know. And, you know, I started looking at straight friends of mine who were able to get green cards automatically if their partner was from out of the country. And it just struck me like this inequity was really, really insane. So that was my first sort of impetus to start the project. And from that, I started investigating, you know, what does marriage mean? What are the legal benefits that come with it? Once I started looking at the history of marriage, and once I started understanding the really integral role that marriage plays in our society, that I think a lot of people don't realize, I became really fascinated by the subject. I had been one of these people who was very much thinking that, well, the gay community should be able to form its own sort of existence, you know, the gay nation, as it were. We shouldn't be relying or trying to mimic the straight system or the straight way of being, and marriage is archaic anyway, and, you know, all this sort of stuff. And as I started investigating it, I came, I think, to a sense of appreciating the reality of what marriage is and realizing that if there are these unparalleled numbers of rights, why should gay and lesbian couples be denied those rights, either on the state or the federal level?
Are we so wise today that we are ready to reject 5,000 years of recorded history?
Our nation must defend the sanctity of marriage.
Sam and Mickey's stories came along to me in two different ways. Mickey's story I'd read about in The Advocate, and I just called her up and asked her if she'd be interested in being in the documentary. Her partner of 13 years, they were married for 10 years in a ceremony through the MCC Church in St. Petersburg. Her partner, Lois, who also worked for the Tampa Police Force, was killed during a bank robbery, and they basically ambushed her and gunned her down.
Officer Lois Marrero, 19 years on the force, died at Tampa General Hospital.
Mickey and Lois were respected by the police force. They were treated as a couple, as spouses in the police force. And when that happened, Mickey was treated as a surviving spouse, to the point where she was given the folded flag off of Lois's coffin at the funeral. Well, skip ahead to the point where the question of Lois's pension comes in, and it becomes a whole different story.
Lois Marrero was killed on July 6, 2001, before she ever had a chance to designate Mickey as her beneficiary. And Mickey's claim is based on this violation of Chapter 185. She's here today asking the board to correct that violation in the only way that's possible at this point in time.
Sam, I found through the ACLU.
I was sitting on a pier on Arkansas River. He walked up behind me. We sat and talked till 2 o'clock in the morning. He just kind of went on from there.
ACLU had filed an amicus brief in Sam's case. He was facing basically eviction from his property by his deceased partner Earl's first cousins, who had nothing to do with Earl, had nothing to do with their lives together, but decided that, you know, there's this wonderful piece of property that now we can try to get, and challenged Earl's will in court. He had a will leaving the property to Sam. It had been a family property through the years, so it was in Earl's name. Thought he had done everything to protect them and to protect his legacy in Sam's name and in the name of the three sons that they had raised together. And there was a technical error in the will. It was missing one witness signature. So we chronicle sort of Sam's need to fight and defend his home.
Dad and Earl, you know, Dad would sell stuff. He took care of the taxes, took care of all the receipts on the property. Dad would go up and pay the taxes. Of course, it was all in Earl's name, but he went up and paid it. It's just really screwed up because when Earl passed away, you know, all Dad had was about $2,000 to his name. Mm-hmm. And within 2 days of after we buried Earl, it was all tied up in court.
The choir needs rehearsal. And what we're doing, hopefully, is giving them a song list to read from. So it is important to have the choir there and to build that base. And then we're going to reach out to the straight world, who, once they see this film, will hopefully say, I get it, and be supportive of our equal rights.
The Supreme Court ruled today that it is unconstitutional to deny same-sex couples the right to marry.
Hello, I'm Steve Pride, and you've been listening to part one of a two-part visit with director Jem Dassav. His film is called Tying the Knot, and I highly recommend it. More info can be found at www.1049films.com. Don't miss part two of our visit, coming soon right here on This Way Out.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, the international lesbian and gay radio magazine. This week, Cindy Friedman, Rick Watts, Graham Underhill, Rex Walkner, Susan Gage, and Steve Pride contributed program material. Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. Remember, you can listen to This Way Out anytime online, exclusively on Planet Out. There's a link at our website, www.thiswayout.org. Some This Way Out operating expenses are funded through direct charitable donations from our listeners. We thank you. Only you can keep this program on the air and get some queer history, music, and culture on specially produced CDs. For all the details, please do log on to thiswayout.org or write to us at Post Office Box 38327, Los Angeles, California, 90038, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Greg Gordon. Thanks for listening on WEOS Geneva and Ithaca, New York, CJSR Edmonton, Alberta, KRZA Alamosa, Colorado, and more than 150 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Please stay tuned.